Saturday morning on Power Talk Radio, 1460 and 101 FM. It's time for us to continue on the Experts Program, and Edward King is joining us today. Good morning, Edward.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, today is day number three of the AT&T Pro-Am, and we're broadcasting live from the Pro-Am all day today and tomorrow. And, of course, today is the big day for the big crowds and the celebrities. Today is the day that what they term as the A group, the biggest golfers and biggest celebrities, the way they set up the schedule, the tournament, they always make sure that the biggest names and the biggest golfers are at Pebble Beach on Saturday.
Oh, of course.
Because that's the course with the largest ability for galleries. They have more cameras. Yep. CBS and the Golf Channel have the maximum number of cameras possible at Pebble.
Well, you have to do it big time if you're going to bring the TV crowd in and so forth. So
now, you have a golfing background. Just as an aside, you played golf for quite a while. Have you been out to watch the Pro-Am before?
Oh, I did, all the way back in the Jack Nicklaus era. And, and it was lovely looking at it from a perspective of being in the crowd. Of course, it's even more fun to be in the group. So. Yeah,
did you ever have a chance to play as an amateur?
No, I always played in my pro career and my amateur career, you might say, was always in the South.
Okay.
You know, and up through the middle of the country. So
when you watch those great golfers like Nicklaus or Palmer or any of the people of that era, what, as a golfer, what did you think when you would watch just their game? What was it that you were looking for or admiring?
Well, their stamina, you know, their determination, their total commitment to the game, and their focus. I mean, you know, you look at someone like a Lee Trevino, and what they had was an unorthodox swing and kind of an over-the-top attitude out there, which was a lot of fun. But he was bound and determined to beat Jack every time he came up against him. So, and he did. So
it's interesting you mentioned stamina, because, you know, the average fan doesn't think of golf as being a sport that requires stamina, because the players are walking around, right? It's not like soccer where they're running for 90 minutes or basketball or football or what have you. But the stamina is so important, because, as an example, if you play one day 18 holes and you have a 60-year-old, you know, say a guy that's on the senior tour and he's playing some guys in their 20s and 30s, he can play a pretty good round of golf and maybe even beat them in 18.
Right.
But once you get to three rounds and four rounds, that's where the older guys fall off, because they don't have the legs anymore.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the reality is, you know, they might even be in the top three leading into Saturday's round. They've already got, you know, 36 holes behind them. And the stamina, what that's interesting is the effort of the physical play is part of it, but it's the mental play that's the toughest part of golf. And, you know, when you have to do that, you're thinking about everybody else in the field, you're looking at a paycheck at the end, you got bills to pay. There's pressure associated with it. When I met Tiger and talked with him and found out that what he does before he tees off on the first hole of the first round is he always ends up in the bathroom throwing up. And I'm thinking, if the stress is hitting the number one guy, you know what it's like for everybody else. Yeah. You know, the Phils of the world and so on and so forth. But
of course, if you're number 150, you may not feel any stress.
No, you're on the cut line and you're hoping to get your card for next season.
There you go.
But the other thing, too, that they face that they don't anymore is the conditions of the course. I mean, you know, right now on the tour, every sand trap is beautifully maintained. Right. Back in the old days, there were stones and rocks and dead hardwood underneath it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a different game.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, quick thing before we go into the topic for today, as we finish up on the golf talk here.
Right.
I remember back in the 90s, there was a year where they wanted to get a regulation tournament of 54 holes in, and we had just rain and storming, and they ended up suspending the tournament, and they finished it up on a travel day in August, a Monday.
Oh, no kidding. I
and
don't remember
so they brought all the pros, just the pros, no celebrities, no amateurs. They brought the pros that made the cut back after 36 holes on a Monday, and of course, the weather was beautiful, but they got to finish the tournament under winter rules, and those guys were getting the best scores in the world out there.
That's like cheating. Come on. That's cheating.
Anyway,
so I'm glad I'm not out in the swamp today.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
I feel sorry for the guys.
Hey, our topic today is the do's and don'ts of the termination process, and while it's not fun to talk about it, it is necessary, because somewhere along the line, there is always going to be the issue of separation.
That's right.
Every business faces it.
Yeah, And the reality is what we're talking about here is an employee that is problematic. I mm-hmm. mean, you know, it also is a caustic situation. You've probably have had some already impacts back and forth between other employees and their immediate supervisors. So there is a checklist, and we're going to get started on it this Saturday. We'll have to finish it up next Saturday because these 10 steps are all very, very important. So, okay. So I want to start with where you should begin at. Obviously, please remember you should be documenting issues all along the way. So that supervisors should be writing down dates and times. They should be sharing that journal with the HR and looking at this in advance. So number one rule is make sure more than one individual is involved in the termination decision. And those people along with the HR, so we're talking manager, supervisor, plus HR,
right.
You should carefully examine the facts and circumstances at hand, because here's a key point. Your decision must be job related. It can't be because they have, you know, crazy hair or they're just kind of like different than you. And that job related issue should be supported by absolute relevant documentation. You know, discipline notices, performance reviews. You know, you just can't go, you're fine for your reviews for 2 years. And then all of a sudden, we think you're awful and you have been awful for the last 2 years. You're going to have a problem with that. Termination decisions should be based on the should never be based on the employee's protective activity. Here it is, such as if they're filing a discrimination complaint or taking a job protected leave, you know, like they had a baby or something like that, or because an employee is a member of a protected class. You can't just dislike them because you think this or that about some general class of people. If the employee's performance is the issue, consider whether you haven't given them reasonable opportunity to improve. So in those performance reviews I talked about earlier, if you're saying you're fine, you've never given them an opportunity to hear the issue or address it and try to improve. So make sure that in your quarterly or your semi-monthly or semi-yearly or at least once a year, you know, performance reviews, you really have to list their goods and the bads, especially give them, you know, these are the documents and things that we want you to improve over the next X period of time. So that groundwork is absolutely important. The other last point about this is that there has to be consistency on how you handle similar situations in the past and with other employees. So that way, if they say, I've been singled out, you let John and Jane, you know, do the same thing, and now you're picking on me, that it certainly would undermine the credibility of a valid termination. So so these are the areas you got to be consistent with.
Is that like when you've consulted businesses, have you seen the termination process screwed up and have had to counsel business managers and owners about it?
Yeah, all the time. And what's interesting about that, they'll approach me and say, I just have to get rid of this employee. I follow up with going through this situation in details, and I basically say, well, I understand where you want to go with them, but you really have to start the clock all over again because you haven't done your due diligence to make sure that you're in a proper standing, that's the employer, in regards to being able to clearly do the termination without any recourse. Mm-hmm. You don't want this falling back on you and having a lawsuit or even going to the labor relations board, because that's unnecessary time and issues. And frankly, you're going to have people out there complaining about you. So.
And it also seems, Edward, that courts, labor relations boards tend to be more sympathetic to the aggrieved employee than the employer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, basically, even with a real strong case, I've seen this with other lawyers representing companies or even myself sitting in on this. You have an absolute, what you would consider black and white, shut down, easy, you know, complaint against the employee, and they still win. So, I mean, it's a lose-lose situation. It's the best way to do it is to be well-documented so that the employee that you're going to terminate it literally knows in advance this is coming down the road because I have not measured up, and they need to know what they need to measure up against. So that's absolutely critical.
Anything else to add to this?
Not on that point. I've got...
Okay.
How much time do we have?
We have about 2 minutes.
All right. So we'll get started on prepare for the meeting. So, you know, once you've made this decision and you've got everything laid out and you've got all your ducks in a row, you need to schedule a time and a place for the meeting. You know, so you want to hold the meeting in a private situation like like a small office, maybe not away from work, but certainly in an office that you can be. But also, you want to have a witness present. You don't want a one-on-one in this particular situation. As a matter of fact, if I was to step back to the steps leading up to it, probably on a previous review where you give them a warning, a written warning, you should probably have a second person in there with that meeting as well. And that predates the meeting of, here we go, this is termination. All right, so going on with that. So you really need to think carefully what you're planning on saying. And so if you've got two people in there, you would need to, meaning yourself and the other HR person or whatever, you need to plan in advance and agree on exactly the topics you're going to talk about, how you're going to say it, and be totally strategy based on what you're going to say. Now, next, when you're talking with the employee, you got to be straightforward. You also have to show and have with you documentation that supports this decision. You know, just don't say, I feel that, you know, you don't like this job. I feel. Don't go that way. Give the an employee an opportunity to respond in this conversation. So don't just say, you're done, get out of here. But when you do, make sure you give them a clear understanding that the decision is final. You know, don't give them a feeling of they can talk their way out of it. But don't forget, you need to give them an opportunity to respond. Your employee, at this point possibly your ex-employee, could very well react with anger, disappointment, grief, tears, who knows? But you have to be prepared to handle that reaction and emotionally not respond.
Okay.
You know, so it's kind of a cold process, right? Obviously. And then lastly, so that we can continue this next week, while you may show compassion, such as thanking them for their contributions and wishing them well, avoid saying anything that is false or misleading in the attempt to soften the blow. Don't soften the blow. And, you know, that's kind of counterintuitive for us because, you know, there must be, not everybody has compassion or empathy, but if there is part of your nature, you're going to feel sorry for this person. That's normal. The problem is you can't let your emotion rule the words coming out of your mouth.
Right.
You have to stick to your game plan, skip to the script, make sure that the witness is not also undermining the credibility of what you're representing. And you don't need to consider you're going to hold a hammer over the head, but it has to be final, it has to be decisive, it has to be supported, and it has to be documented. So there you go. That's right. Number two. Next week, we'll continue on.
All right. Edward King has been our guest from Alliance Career Training Solutions. It's alliancetrains.com on the web. Edward, the telephone number.
It's 755-8200. And don't forget Saturday afternoon for Business Sense Radio at 1:30.
That's right. You beat me to it. Thank you.
All right.
Have a good afternoon.
You too, Mark.